30 years. Sam and Tom and Joe were youngsters. Dan, their little brother, was only 5 when they and their dad dug that hole in the front yard at 308 North Jefferson Street. It happened during one of the family's annual springtime get-togethers in Silver Lake, Indiana. Grandma and Grandpa were waiting on the front porch for Doc and Marilyn and the boys, who were promptly greeted with warm hugs and "It's been too long. Ever tell you I grew up in this house?" Doc asked his young sons. Of course, he had reminded them every time they'd visited. Matter of fact, that house on North Jefferson at 308 North Jefferson Street had been in the Haney family for 3 generations before the boys came along. Anyway, the afternoon of the first day of that particular visit, Doc took the boys aside, suggested they do something nice for Grandma and Grandpa, something to commemorate Mother's Day and Father's Day, since it was then between the two. Maybe he surprised them by driving out to the nursery on Wabash and bringing back a tree to plant in their yard. Well, the boys were eager. Off they went. And there were plenty of trees at the nursery. There were sugar maples that promised to grow fast and glow golden next autumn. There were oaks that would smile down on many future generations of Haneys. And the leaves would turn russet each year before they tumbled down. But then Doc spied a little spruce tree, a young Norway spruce. It appeared to be kind of spindly and sparse, about 5 feet tall, and still there was something about that scrawny little evergreen that got Doc's attention, even made him feel certain somehow that if he and the boys did not take it, it would just stand there lonely forever. All during the ride home, Sam and Tom and Joe and Dan peered out the rear window of the car, speaking words of reassurance to the little spruce tree, which itself seemed to be peeking anxiously from beneath the tied-down trunk lid. Back home, the race was on to dig the hole and plant the tree before Grandma and Grandpa discovered the surprise. And were they surprised? And how they thanked their boy and his boys with more hugs and this time even a couple of tears. Almost 30 years ago. The Hindus have a fancy philosophy called karma. Plain English, it means that what you do comes back to you. And I'm sure this much is true. Every kind word that you bestow, every helping hand you extend, every job you do well, every tree you plant, you leave outstretched arms waiting for your return. You may have heard how last October, 1996, Doc and Marilyn Haney were piloting their little plane, a 1949 vintage Piper PA-16, and the engine went out over Silver Lake, Indiana, and they crashed. But after a stay in the hospital, despite spinal fractures and serious head injuries and such, the now 60-ish Dr. and Mrs. Haney have recovered completely. They survived. And for one reason only. You see, between the time engine trouble caught them unprepared and the time their plane struck the ground, the final moments of that descent were cushioned and their fall was broken by the limbs of a towering spruce tree in the front yard of the old house at 308 North Jefferson Street. You know the rest of the story.
Protecting what matters on the right choice, AM 1230 KPRL 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. We have another local political heavyweight in the studio today. Not really, Heather. You know what I'm speaking euphemistically. No, I'm not. No. Anyway, I sure know how to step in it, don't I? All right. We're going to be talking to Heather Moreno, San Luis Obispo County District 5 Supervisor. We're going to spend a bunch of time, I think, on California's growing structural budget deficit and the impact on the potential impact on the proposed Slo County budget. We're also going to chat about a proposed state pension It's a bill in the legislature right now, and how it will impact local government budgets, potentially again, and then a report on progress made or not on county priorities. What comes next? So, Heather, welcome back.
So glad to be here, Barry.
It's all, I really appreciate it. I know how busy you are. You just got back from CSAC and all that kind of stuff. We're going to talk about that. Folks, you can call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So you've been all over the place, and you just got back from something called the California Association of Counties meeting, CSAC. This is kind of a civics lesson kind of thing. Tell the audience what CSAC is and how it kind of informs your thinking.
CSAC is an organization comprised of all 58 counties, member counties. And I think of CSAC as two main things: advocacy, in terms of advocating for common interests of the 58 counties, and advocating with the legislature, you know, usually for or against certain legislation. And then the other piece of it is education, helping to educate electeds as well as staff, you know, executive office, and others who will attend those conferences as well, educating us as to, you know, what is the state doing, how are we to implement certain pieces of legislation, and sharing best practices. So It's helpful to kind of get out of your area and see what others are doing.
So is it, I mean, I'm gathering that since this is California, you know, the super majority of people that are there are all Democrat, right?
I am in a super minority, yes.
but not a preferred super minority, right?
Yeah, the one thing we all have in common is the desire to protect local government from an overreach by the state. Mm-hmm. So that is something that we can all get behind and can, you know, bring you to some, you know, similar conclusions on a lot of legislation.
Well, I gathered from what I read, and I mean, I've heard of CSAC before, but it's really a lobbying group. It's an advocacy group for the counties, basically.
Yes. And they really seek that broad buy-in when they're advocating. Mm-hmm. And most of the, you know, the majority of the counties, if you go by number, are the rural counties. So,
right.
You know, I know there's always this sense that, you know, your LA, San Francisco types of counties will overshadow everything. I think that CSAC has done a good job of structuring its board and its committees in a way that it brings all of those voices in, and it advocates on things that we have a broad consensus on.
So how do they balance the rural, suburban, urban conundrum we have in the state?
It's making sure that there's representation within the board and on the committees. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we each have our own caucus as well. So there are the three different caucuses. And we also have policy committees. So I serve on the GFA, which is the Government Finance and Administration Policy Committee, and got to do that for the first time this last go around.
Yeah, what was that like?
I enjoyed it. What we do is we bring in speakers that are, you know, pertinent to the moment. And one of the areas that the GFA Policy Committee looks at is AI. It's only noon or 1 o'clock.
Dyslexic.
You're
dyslexic.
Yeah,
dyslexic.
Is AI. So we had speakers from California Chamber of Commerce. We had someone from Contra Costa County, the CIO, talking about how they're implementing things in their agency. And then also someone from labor talking about the impacts on the workforce, and had a really good panel. Also had someone from the Legislative Analyst Office, which we can talk about later.
Yeah.
So it is, you know, bringing together folks, having a conversation, allowing those in the room to ask questions, and I really enjoyed it.
So you found it pretty valuable then. It's good use of your time. All right, and county time, really.
Yes, for sure.
Good. All right, so you pointed out a bill that's in the California legislature right now. Hey, folks, you want to write this one down, because it's going to be a big one, AB 1383, and it's got a very anodyne name called Public Employees Retirement Benefits, which doesn't tell us what it really is trying to do, right?
Yeah, and what it really aims to do is, it's aimed at public safety recruitment and retention, and we all share that goal. The concern for counties is that the bill could really increase long-term pension obligations without a clear funding source.
Mm-hmm.
And
how would it do that?
It would be do that by reducing the retirement age and increasing the benefit paid out.
And the retirement age is what?
It varies depending on the tier that somebody is in, but this one for the tier three, the employees that were affected by PEPRA, which is the Public Employees Pension Retirement Act, back in, it went into place January 1st of 2013, would decrease that age from 57 to 55 and then potentially increase.
And who are those people?
Public safety.
Public safety. Yeah. Okay.
And then would increase the benefit. And this would all be negotiable. Mm-hmm. But we know how, you know, over time,
we know how that goes. Right.
We'll go from the 2 to 3%. So it's a challenge. How do we protect that recruitment and retain our employees while also having the funding to do that?
Well, I'm a guy who is in the insurance business, and I hang out with actuaries all the time. And in fact, I'm working with some right now. And so we've got public employee pension systems that are struggling. I mean, just on the current face. So by reducing the age of retirement, it's going to increase the obligation to have more money in these accounts, correct?
Correct.
And why do they think this is a good idea?
The argument for it is that it will improve recruitment, or better be able to hire on folks, and that it will also better retain your workforce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as you talked about with the costs and looking, you know, actuarially, what PEPRA was designed to do is, after the Great Recession, you just had pension costs that were ballooning and unfunded, you know, pension obligations, and PEPRA really came in to try to put a pause on that and put some guardrails so it just didn't keep skyrocketing. And then what this threatens to do is to remove those guardrails. And what's challenging is that in a downturn, you can look at items in your budget and pull back on things. You know, maybe you need to make cuts, maybe it's in staffing, maybe it's in, you know, other expenses, but you have to look at, you know, kind of across the board, how do we balance the budget? But when you've made legal commitments and pension costs aren't something that you can, you know, based on a downturn, affect in any way. They just keep rising.
So CSAC is taking an oppose on this at this point, right?
CSAC as well as the Rural Counties Organization as well.
Because, I mean, when an organization takes a real oppose as opposed to wait and see, they're pretty, overall, the counties think this is a great idea for them.
They do not. They know what it would do to local budgets. The California League of Cities as well, Cal Cities, is opposed to it. You know, I was speaking with we do our legislative day on Friday at CSAC, and so I was speaking with a senator and asked her about this legislation, and she said one of the challenges with our current assembly members, which this passed out of the assembly 70-2, 8 members were absent. She said part of the problem with the current assembly is that there are a lot of new members and a lot with no local government experience. Mm-hmm. If you don't have any experience in local government, you have no concept as to what this does to the budget.
Okay, and this is all being proposed at a time when they can't make the state budget balance. And you and your colleagues of the Board of Supervisors are trying to figure out how to hire a few extra employees for Dan. So, you know, why does the legislature think this is a good idea? Common sense is not very common, is it?
No, if you don't understand local government and you just think, oh yes, public safety, because we do, like, public safety is our top priority, right? And I think as a municipality and local government, it should be every single, you know, government body's top priority is public safety. So understanding that, yes, but how do we work on recruitment and retention that doesn't impact our budget decades and decades into the future, which then can have negative consequences when you say, well, gosh, now our budget is ballooning and we need to make cuts. We obviously can't do it in pensions. So then you have to start cutting salaries or positions. And it just makes things a bit lopsided.
Yeah. Well, again, it's to me, it's, you know, it's a common sense kind of approach. You know, I mean, and one of the things we're looking at, the failure of the Social Security system in the not too distant future, where there are going to be structural cutbacks if they can't figure out a way to actuarially game the program a little bit more, and all of our entitlement programs, as we're hearing, and we'll talk about this a little bit.
It's frustrating. I remember back during the George W. Bush administration, and he talked about let's make some structural changes, and he was hung up to.
They
wanted to skin him alive. And come on, we do need to make some changes. And
well, I mean, as a guy who's okay, so I'm 72, and people say, "Why do you keep working?" And I say, "Well, other than the fact that I like it, okay, that's the number one." Well, I don't know about that, but but the point is, I don't have any faith in these government entitlement programs. Because if I do live a long life, their money's going to run out first, and then my money will run out next.
Yeah.
And so it's just a matter of I like my lifestyle, and I want to protect it as long as I can. Right. And it's just a common sense kind of thing. But anyway, so this leads us into this discussion of the latest legislative analyst office report on the budget and the general fund deficit. That they're calling $18 billion, it's really more than that. So what was there some discussion about this at CSAC?
Yeah, with the May revision, revenues have actually come in higher. But what the LAO is saying is that you have a revenue boom right now. That our revenues are 30% higher than they were just 3 years ago. But we are, instead of taking some of that money and putting it into reserves, we're actually taking money out of reserves to the tune of about $20 billion. Mm. So the LAO is very critical that we are reducing our reserves in a time where we should actually be building them up.
Well, and when they do these analysis, and I kind of skimmed this, are they taking into effect, the state owes the feds like something like $23 billion for this EDD, COVID-era EDD loan that was given to the state. What I read about it about a week ago when it was, basically the feds are saying, we're cutting off all California's money until they start paying that back to us.
That was not mentioned in Friday's meeting.
Yeah, probably not.
But what I do have from them is they have a general fund condition summary table, and it shows the reserves from the 2024-25 year to this upcoming, or to this current one, 25-26, to then the proposed 26-27. And total reserves have gone from $47 million to just under $47 billion to just under $40 billion, and the next year to be just under $20 billion.
And in driving over here to the station, I heard the White House is doubling down on this Medicaid and Medicare fraud stuff because I think they see it as a good midterm campaign issue.
Yes.
And the Vice President Vance is all on it.
I think rightfully so. It's been something that both sides of the aisle have talked about for years and years, but nobody has seemed to really do anything. And I think, taxpayers get a little bit fed up with that. What I notice is my constituents are compassionate people. They want to help people in need,
right. But
they don't want to be taken advantage of. They don't want their money wasted or used fraudulently.
Right. And again, and what happens is there's two people getting hurt. It's the people who should, the legitimate people who should be getting the services that aren't.
Yes.
And the taxpayers.
Yes.
And that's really what's happening here. So hopefully they'll be successful. They were having Vance was meeting with state attorneys general. I was wondering if Rob Bonta was there, but I'm probably guessing he wasn't. So anyway, so let's bring this home now. How is all this fall for all with the state budget impacting what's going on with the Slo County budget that you're in the process of pulling it together at this point?
Really, the biggest thing will be HR 1 and what happens with that. We still have yet to see.
Tell everybody what HR 1 is.
Yeah, so HR 1 was the big, beautiful bill.
Big, beautiful bill.
And there are certain requirements with Medicaid. So the reauthorizing rather than 12 months and 6 months, there are certain work requirements. And so at the county level, there has been a lot of angst about what is this going to cost, mm-hmm. and how many people are going to be thrown off the rolls and then become eligible for indigent care services. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we're looking at. So there is not a really good estimate. I'm hearing at our county, it could be somewhere from, maybe 2 to 6 million. How do we handle it? Do we do something internally ourselves? Do we work with SenCal? Do we go through, CMPS? There could be a variety of things, but that is not yet taken care of in this budget because we don't have that information.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, is anybody sitting in a back room, though, saying, boy, if this happens, doing, game playing, kind of what a strategic, if this happens, or it's just a wait and see.
I think everyone's doing it, but there is a bit of a wait and see. Mm-hmm. And the frustration counties have had with the state is that they provided very little funding, mm-hmm. Because this is what we're required to do. We're required to provide these services.
Yeah.
But the state is coming in with very little to say, hey, we're going to help with that.
Yeah, and most of this money, a lot of these services fall under the county Department of Health, right, which has been split out.
Right.
So you have had a whole, that was as a result of the KPMG, consulting audits, right?
Yeah, we did a split looking to create some greater accountability and, mm-hmm. and transparency. So behavioral health and the public health agents, public health are now two different departments rather than one health agency. And then some of these folks are also, use the services through Department of Social Services. So there's, a lot of touches on these individuals.
So you guys are just going to basically keep moving forward, hoping that, you'll be able to adjust later on.
And I think one of the things we need to be cognizant of is keeping our reserves strong. Mm-hmm. Last year during the budget cycle, some of my colleagues decided to take, about $4.2 million out of reserves to do some things, mm-hmm. and isn't what I would have chosen to do. And I think this time we need to be very prudent in keeping those reserves in place.
Okay, well, we come back, we're going to wrap up this conversation about, maybe you can give us a little backstory on what's going on with Dan Dow's request for some extra employees. Sure. So we'll be back, folks, in about 2 minutes. So stand by.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care. All your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Tom Graham. Iran denouncing the most recent U.S. strikes as a sign of bad faith today as negotiations toward a peace deal continue. Several nations in the region are pushing for a permanent ceasefire.
Leaders here in the Gulf are still hopeful and trying to actively work to get that U.S.-Iran peace deal across the line. We know a delegation from Tehran recently traveled to Qatar to continue diplomatic efforts there, but complicating this entire picture, those recent strikes carried out overnight by the U.S. military in southern Iran.
Fox's Jeff Paul, several airports ramping up efforts to keep the Ebola virus from spreading to the U.S. after an outbreak in Central Africa.
Already three airports, Atlanta, Washington, Houston, they will be screening passengers for anyone who comes out of Congo or some neighboring countries.
Fox's Steve Harrigan at Hartsfield-Jackson Airport in Atlanta. America's listening to Fox News.
Do you use propane? At Delta Liquid Energy, you can pre-buy your winter propane gallons to lock in your price. Fuel prices fluctuate, so with Delta Liquid Energy, you can take advantage of potential pre-buy savings. To learn more, contact Delta Liquid Energy before June 30th. Family-owned and operated, call Delta Liquid Energy 805-239-0616 or go online to deltaliquidenergy.com.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Heather Moreno, San Luis Obispo County District 5 Supervisor. Call or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, you know, before we go to the Dan Dowd situation, Heather was just pointing something out that the governor, see, there's no end to taxes, folks. No. I mean, what is this new tax that Newsom
is? I love it because they always talk about revenue.
Yeah.
And it is revenue to the government. Yeah. It's always couched in, oh, we're looking for revenue.
It's OPM. It's OPM.
For sure. And this is a taxing digital software. So the May revision includes a proposal to extend the sales and use tax that we pay here in California to digital pre-written software and software as a service. So like SaaS.
Yeah.
Which, okay, great. What's next?
Yep. Well, yeah, again, they'll find something. If Reagan used to say, if it moves, tax it, right?
Yeah.
I just lost my internet connection. That's terrible. I'll have to come back on in a minute. Now I can't look at my notes. Okay.
And you're going to have to pay tax on it.
I'm going to have to pay tax. That's right. Newsom heard him talking about the internet, and there I go. Let's turn our attention here. You know, I mean, there was, I guess at the last week's board meeting, Dan Dow made an impassioned request, yeah. I guess would be a good point, for four or five what he considers to be needed employees. He wrote an op-ed on it in the Cal Coast News this morning. Yes. And I think people would be interested in kind of knowing your thoughts on this. Is there some nuance that we're not picking up here that people should keep in mind, you think?
Yeah, well, and number one, public safety is our very top priority. And so there is no desire to defund the DA. That is not happening. In terms of the five positions, in speaking with the executive office, I know that we will be able to have those positions funded. I think it's a matter of where does the funding come from and, you know, temporary, you know, one time versus ongoing. And I think in these budget years, it's challenging to commit to ongoing. Mm-hmm. But we ongoing need to fund public safety. So the nuance is that we will get it worked out. It's just a matter of how does that look. And I'm also committed to talking to Dan. We are going to connect later this week because I want to better understand where he's coming from and really see the full picture. But I have no doubt we'll get it worked out.
Well, I mean, it seems to me, especially one of the topics that we've covered is helping seniors who are victims of cyber crime and that kind of stuff. Because there's, A, we have way too many old people like me in the county, and I can say that, and a lot of them, I mean, I use some of the services to protect me on the internet because I spend so much time on it, but still not everybody is that vigilant.
But even with the training I get, you get an email and I start to question almost everything. Mm-hmm. And I really have almost taken a personal policy of
nothing.
Just don't trust anything.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm with you. I mark things phishing constantly.
Yes. And Dan's office did some good trainings recently, earlier mm-hmm. this year, that talked about this and how to protect yourself from cyber threats. And I really appreciate the job that he and his office do, not only with prosecuting, but also protecting and advocating for victims.
Yeah. All right. Well, again, it'll be interesting to see how this whole budget thing plays out. And I know you've got a sharp eye for the numbers. So I think, you know, you're a good person to have there at this point. And I'm sure you'll hold, you know, Bruce accountable and Jimmy accountable for things
I at least my goal is to just be clear on where I stand mm-hmm. and be clear about the numbers and what we're
right,
doing.
Right. And for listeners, I think Dan's going to be on tomorrow with Eric. So if you have questions, you're going to get to hear what he has to say. I think that's what Eric told me this morning. So anyway, so let's move on. You know, affordable housing, mm-hmm. one of the recurring themes on Protecting What Matter is a linchpin of private sector economic development. Without that, we're not going to get anything. You know, I mean, you can't get private companies. People don't have a place to live that they can afford. They're not going to move here. Yeah. And people move out. You know, I mean, I've talked to a number of people who are recruiters for people in the tech area, and they come to Cal Poly to recruit, and they take our young people who we're spending all of our money on getting them educated, and they leave and go to Minnesota or wherever it is, wherever these tech or Tennessee to work. So you pointed out to me something, and I was actually kind of horrified by this, the California Regional Housing Needs Allocation. I mean, this is like, I mean, and you guys are kind of bound to this architecture that's it's socialism. I mean, in my mind, I mean, because this is the state telling San Luis Obispo County and all 58 counties, this is what we want you to do. So tell us a little bit about this RHNA and how that impacts your thinking on the board. Won't actually speak for anybody else, but
so RHNA, RENA, Regional Housing Needs Allocation, the state comes up with what they think based on current population and expected growth, what the need is going to be in housing, and divides it up between all the counties and says, here, you need to make space for this, so to speak. There's not currently a demand that we build it, thank goodness, because we don't build, nor should we. But there is, we must have a housing element, which is a part of our general plan that is updated to reflect how we are going to make it easy to do this, or as easy as possible, and how we will facilitate it, how we'll remove barriers. But they come up with this number based on a pretty crazy formula. So we're currently what's called the sixth cycle, and that goes from 2020 to 2028. So we're now getting ready for the seventh cycle, which will start in 2029, but we've got to start getting through the numbers. The number preliminarily that the state has given to SLOCOG for our county is over 15,000.
15,000 new homes.
15,000.
People could afford.
Right. Well, and then what they do is they divide it up. They divide it into moderate, above moderate, and then low and very low. And my understanding in this next cycle, they've come up with two more categories. One is acutely low, and the other is, I'm paraphrasing, super duper low. You know, and you know that takes a percentage of the median income and says it has to be affordable for a person making this amount. That means it needs to cost this in terms of rent, and the thing, Barry, this regional housing needs allocation takes hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of dozens of people in our county.
And millions of dollars.
Because of the cost of people.
Right.
It does not create one house.
Right.
Not one house. So that's one of the most frustrating things, is this is just a bureaucratic, you know, nightmare that we then have to go and try to finagle and make happen. I would rather that we put that time to saying, how do we make it easier to build good development here in San Luis Obispo County that our residents want and need? And then go to work on that. But instead, we spend a ton of time on this, and then, you know, we have disagreements at the board in terms of, you know, do we just try to get money from developers to fund affordable housing, which is really subsidized housing, or do we make it easier for people to build all kinds of housing, which is increasing the supply? And that's what, you know, that's what anybody in the industry will tell you, is that we need to increase supply.
Well, again, so is this RENA stuff, is this advisory, or is it actual policy that you have to comply with?
It's interesting. It is. We have to have the housing element, again, which is part of the general plan,
right,
set up and show that we have the zoning that will allow for this. And we also have to have, you know, objectives that we might meet that show how we're going to help facilitate that and remove roadblocks. And then we have to send all of that. Here's our plan on how to try to achieve this, because again, we don't build as government, nor should we. And then we send it to the state, to housing and, you know, housing and community development, and they sign off on it. If we don't get it signed off on by them, then we're in a world of hurt. And
we're wasting money.
Suffer.
We're wasting money on this stuff.
We're always wasting money.
Yeah. Sorry.
All the time. Jeez. All the time. Thank you, State of California.
Yeah.
So I know there are things we can be doing. One thing that Even prior to my coming on the board, that my colleagues wanted to look at was objective design standards. It's something that we did in Atascadero. It's something other jurisdictions have done. And unfortunately, my colleagues have kind of been dragging their feet on even getting the process going. So that's something we should have started late last year, and it's still not happening.
Sorry, folks, I hit the microphone. Welcome to Protecting What Matters. What's your question for Heather?
Well, I'm just thinking, isn't it time for us to get together with the other 51 counties or however many there are?
58
counties. and do some pushback on this. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, so,
it's absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. That's all I have.
No, well, that's a good call. You took the words right out of my mouth.
You're preaching to the choir, as they say.
Thank you for calling.
And I will let you know that we are, to the last caller and those of you listening, we are at a regional level. We are pushing back on this number.
Mm-hmm.
It is the first thing we've gotten. I could go through with you how they came up with this, which makes so little sense. Just what they consider our cost burden adjustment because of our high cost of living, that's 9,400 of those 15,000 units. So we are pushing back at a county level.
Well, and again, I mean, where does CSAC stand on this? I mean, you got a lot of rural counties like us. Does CSAC have a position on this RENA stuff?
So it comes out, it's
you can just say no.
It's that it doesn't all roll out at once. This is what I learned recently, is that we are the first cog, so Council of Governments, we're the first cog out of the gate that's gotten any information. I'm told, I think Sacramento is going to be the second one, and whether they got it last week or going to be getting it soon. Others do it county by county. Some are in different cycles, like they might be different years. So it's not like we all get it at once and can all band together. So, but it will be an interesting conversation as this more of the counties are seeing what the allocation is.
Well, and I mean, so first of all, this is just top-down socialism. I mean, when it comes right down to it, this is like right out of Ayn Rand, the Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. That's number one. Number two, one of the things that you said that was disturbing to me is that affordable housing means subsidized housing.
Yes.
No, affordable housing should mean something... letting people run, go to build stuff that people want and can afford to buy.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be that subsidized.
Well, when we were doling out funding last year to some of the, and we have some really good builders who do this, by the way, like People Self-Help Housing. Mm-hmm. They do excellent projects. They do the subsidized housing. They've also done the, kind of like Habitat for Humanity, mm-hmm. when you have the sweat equity. Mm-hmm. And they have two of those projects in Atascadero that are just beautiful, where people are for a couple of years working on building their own home, mm-hmm. along with, professionals. And, I love something like that. But I looked at these projects, took the total cost, divided by the number of units. One of them was costing over $800,000 a unit, and the other was costing over $900,000 a unit.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, subsidized, not...
Yeah.
Not affordable in the sense that affordable out of the gate. It's affordable to whoever's living there because it's been subsidized by the taxpayer.
Well, I know a few years ago, I looked at building an ADU, a cottage, let's say, on my property out in West Templeton. And the cost of it for was $800,000. The bid.
Well, that's affordable now,
yeah,
Barry.
Yeah. Not for me, it isn't. But, okay, let me ask you one other quick question on economic development. And this was just a comment that I heard, and I just wanted to get your take on it. It seems to me that SLO County, has pretty much outsourced economic development to REACH of Central Coast. And Melissa was on with John, and I mean, they're really trying hard. I don't think anybody thinks they're not trying hard, but again, it doesn't seem like there's not a lot of results. And I mean, what's your whole overview of how we're going to get private sector more other than affordable housing? Because that's obviously everybody's struggling with that, probably in the state of California. How do we get more? Private sector economic development in this county.
Yeah. And to what you said about housing, we do need to have the housing for the workers to have these jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
That's, and we could talk a long time about that. But you're right, REACH is regional,
right.
And very strong, mm-hmm. on a state level. And I'm glad that we have them. But we do need to put more of a focus at the county. And so the board has put that as a tier one priority. And we have contracted with Reach to do some research, pull together some information, and help us with a SWOT analysis that could go into updating the economic element that we have, because we do need to look at that.
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, I saw that, you know, Greg Haskin did this in the CoLab newsletter, that some of the counties, neighboring counties, are just, you know, they're doing it more at the county level, and they're getting some better results.
And we do need to do that. We haven't had a focus there. And
I'm not saying anything bad about Reach. I mean, they're nice people, you know, and it's a nice effort, but okay.
And to the extent we can be partnering with them and leverage the work that they're doing to help us, all the better.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Homelessness dovetails, going back to affordable housing now. And I'll tell you where the homelessness issue. Affordable housing is an issue, particularly for seniors. I mean, I was told by the folks at the the Prado of facility that a good percentage, I think 24-25% were of their people that are homeless are seniors, and they've basically been priced out of their apartments because of what's going on in San Luis Obispo County. So, you know, that's that's a legitimate issue for affordable housing. How do we subsidize maybe that kind of thing, potentially? But I know you've dealt with a lot of these issues as the mayor of Atascadero. And, you know, how well do you think the county is doing on the homelessness front? And do we really have a good handle on it?
I think we have a much better handle than we did several years ago. Mm-hmm. So one of the things, like we did in Atascadero, was the CAT, the Community Action Team. And the Community Action Team is a county team. And so Atascadero has its own team, has a member of the CAT from the county, and also works with ECHO, has their own, you know, mental health professional along with officers. And they've done an excellent job. And the more that the county can provide that type of, you know, assistance to communities, the better. One of the things that the county has really tried to do is look at the interim housing, the permanent supportive housing, and of course, affordable housing. So when we look at those numbers in the five-year plan on homelessness from 2022 to 2027, the goal was to have 300 interim units. And as of 2025, we have 179 of those that have been completed. There's 34 under construction, and then 180 that are in development. And so if those in development come to fruition, we will actually exceed that 300 goal.
Okay. And how much of those, each of those units costing?
Oh, I don't have those numbers, Barry.
But let me ask you this.
Like Welcome Home Village is some of those, and those were that was not an inexpensive project.
Okay, so I guess part of my question here, because these are the things I wake up in the middle of the night thinking about. Okay, it's like, okay, so we still are operating under this, what I consider to be this housing first attitude, or, you know, requirement, basically, by this, again, the top-down state of California. It seems to me that if we're just putting people in housing, are we getting them better? What's the metric for measuring that? You know, getting them off of their addiction and problems, and getting them out doing jobs. I mean, I know there are some success stories. I'm sure there are, but does anybody really know the answer to that?
There are, you're correct, a lot of success stories, a lot of anecdotal information.
Right.
And you can go to ECHO and they can give you a lot of really good statistics. What I really want to see is that we have more of that available at the county. And right now, we have a good system in place. It's just a matter of getting it populated with all the information that we need. So if you go to our dashboard right now, you don't get a ton of information, not a lot of really useful information, comparative information to see where were we last year compared to this year and different things. That what you will see is with the point in time count, which I don't think is a great metric, but it's one we're required to do every 2 years, that has been coming down from 24 to 22. It went down 30-ish% from 24 to 26. It looks like it's probably gone down somewhere in, you know, 8-ish%. Mm-hmm. So it's going down, but the number of people we're serving is going up. So does that mean that the more people we serve, the more we eventually keep out of homelessness? That's what it's looking like. But we need more time and better metrics to really answer those questions.
Yeah. All right. Well, your timing was just perfect. When we come back on the other side of the break, I want to talk to you about the redheaded stepchild of the SLO County priorities called infrastructure and see how, where you think we should be going with that as well. So, folks, we will be back with our final segment with Heather Moreno, District 5 supervisor. So stand by.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks ending mixed, but the NASDAQ and S&P 500 notch new record closes as investors monitor the situation in the Middle East, while AI optimism is fueling a rally in chip and memory stocks. Falling oil prices also lifted market sentiment, with West Texas Intermediate crude at a five-week low and at around $94 a barrel. Tech stocks were the best performers among the 11 S&P 500 sectors, while energy and consumer staples lagged. And shares of Micron Technology rose over 20% and rising above $1 trillion in market capitalization for the first time. The Dow winners Caterpillar, Honeywell, and Sherwin-Williams. The Dow decliners United Health Group, Chevron, and Goldman Sachs. The Dow falling 118 points, the NASDAQ up 312, S&P 500 up 46. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
I'm alpine skier Michaela Schifrin. I've won the most World Cup ski races in history. But what does success mean to me? Success means discipline. It's teamwork. It's the drive and passion inside of us, and it's why Stifel is one of the fastest growing global wealth management firms in the country. If you're looking for success, surround yourself with the people who will get you there. If you're an advisor or investor, choose Stifel, where success meets success.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Past performance is no indication of future results. Investing involves risk. Consult a financial advisor before making any investment decision.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
When it comes to sustainable energy systems and service, Central Coast residents trust Solarponics. Marilyn from Templeton says, quote, "Solarponics installed our system almost 20 years ago. There are occasions when your system needs to be serviced. With Solarponics, work is completed quickly with knowledge and skill. This is as important a part of a solar company as the original installation. Thank you, Marilyn, for your Google review. When we install a sustainable energy system, we're installing a lifetime of as important service. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
Attention Central Coast homeowners. Is your water heater over 7 years old? If so, replace it with a heat pump water heater before it fails and save thousands in energy costs. Plus, new rebates cover up to 80% of the cost. Call or click to get a free, no-hassle quote today. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Heather Moreno, San Luis Obispo County District 5 Supervisor. You can call in or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. Next week, our show is going to, we're going to have an Election Day special, which has become my tradition. I'm going to have Eric Gorham and Kenny Enney as co-hosts, and we're going to have call-ins from Randall Jordan and Darcia Stebbins reporting from the polling booths and all that kind of stuff.
Cool.
So we'll have some fun, and we might bring some other people on as well. So that'll be a fun show. And good. Okay. Let's go back to the redheaded stepchild of SLO County priorities, infrastructure. And of course, the only infrastructure that's been important for the last few years are rotaries, bike, and hiking trails. Okay. But forgetting that for a minute, this question dovetails with this potential SLO cog tax increase. that's been floating out there, and it looks like, and I know that I think the Board of Supervisors has to vote on that at some point,
it
right?
It's LOCOG that has to vote on it. Yeah. That will be next Wednesday.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, where are we at with, I mean, if what happens, I mean, again, where is the county at on infrastructure? And if that LOCOG thing doesn't pass, the text doesn't pass, which I don't think it will really, and I think you might be on the same page there, you know, then what's going to happen with it, that as a priority in the county next year?
Yeah, so the county has consistently put in what's called a maintenance of effort when SB1 that passed. Remember in 2016 when it was their whole repeal the gas tax, or 2018, whatever year that was. And that was an effort to repeal SB1, if I'm trying to remember my numbers, and it failed. So we have this gas tax that, you know, gets allocated to all the jurisdictions. Part of that legislation was that counties and cities had to have a maintenance of effort, meaning whatever you were already putting into roads and had been for a certain period of time, you had to keep doing that. You couldn't say, oh, now we're getting money from this gas tax and we're going to go put this money elsewhere. So at least they did that. For the county, it's a little over $6 million a year that they've been putting in, but it hasn't grown. And as we know, the costs of everything have grown. So essentially, while we're funding the same, we're actually funding less because it's costing more.
Okay, great. Okay, right. So where...
And then the SLOCOG measure you mentioned, that's the half-cent sales tax. It will be coming before us, and I do sit on the SLOCOG board next Wednesday. It will require a two-thirds vote to get it onto the ballot, which means if all 12 members are there, 8 would have to vote to put it on the ballot. If 12 of us are there, my gut says, based on prior voting, that 8 of us would put that on the ballot. I do not think it will pass based on the polling. So what I've said publicly, and unless more information comes out to, you know, tell me otherwise, I don't believe it will pass by two-thirds in November. Right. And therefore, I don't want to spend, you know, $500,000 plus or minus of taxpayer money to put that on the ballot.
So what you're saying is 8 people will vote to put it on the ballot, even though it probably won't pass.
That is my assumption.
That's your, okay.
That's
okay.
My guess.
Okay. Yeah, well, yeah. It's again, we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah.
One of the issues that popped on my radar screen was this whole Lopez Lake lawsuit. I mean, you want to give us a crib notes version of what's going on with that? Or can you?
So I mean, what I can tell you is, we're being sued by some, I would just say, radical environmental groups, and it is costing millions of dollars in the... Basically, they want us, they would love for the dam to be gone, right? And what they are asking and trying to demand that we do is release more water than we are. They want us to release more water than our valves could actually handle.
Great.
release some that could.
Sounds like another infrastructure
cause
project.
Flooding. It is right now, the legal fees have been about $4.3 million to all of the, 5% to the county, the rest to the Zone 3 participants. But, you know, they want us to build this fish ladder. We've already done a feasibility study to show that it's not feasible for us to do that, but they are trying to push for that. I mean, that could be upwards of $500 million or more.
Really?
To do a fish ladder.
Yeah.
So, I feel good about our position, but it's just taking us time to get our HCP into place, Habitat Conservation Plan.
Okay.
And you've got competing species, so whenever you say, here's what we're going to do, well, no, it hurts this species, and then you, okay, now it's hurting this species.
You can't let them work it out.
No,
huh?
You can't let them work it out, so, you've got to get just the right solution to help. And so it's frustrating. There's more studies that have to be done. So could the HCP be ready in 6 months? Sure. Could it be ready in 4 years? Sure. Who knows? And it has to be.
So it's just going to drag on and more lawyers and more cost.
More cost.
Okay.
So, but hopefully we get, we're expecting that the judge could likely rule in the fall on this second preliminary injunction that the plaintiff has filed. We're hopeful of that it would go in our favor.
All right. We've got like a minute left.
Okay.
What have you learned in the last 15 months? Most. What's the number one or two things that you've learned?
I say I'm hopeful that at the county we can really make some structural changes to improve what we do and really deliver for our constituents. So I love that. I also discovered at IWMA, no matter what side of the aisle, Integrated Waste Management Authority, that no matter what side of the aisle you're on, there are people who do respect taxpayer dollars across the board. And we just voted no on accepting a grant from APCD for $87,000 to create two electric car chargers. We said, no, that's a ridiculous amount of money. We don't care that it's grant money. It's still the people's money. It's not free.
For cars that nobody want to buy. Right?
Well, so. For two employees that have cars.
Oh, got it. Yeah. Okay, that explains it. Heather, we'll have a lot more to talk about before the next general election.
Can't wait.
All right, thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
Folks, I'll be back next week with our Election Day special, so have a great one.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazinbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com. Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.